It's another Friday afternoon. You are listening to The Sod Show. You're very welcome. If you want to get in touch, it is at Sod Show on Twitter, facebook.com/The Sod Show, because for some reason or another that part was gone, and sodshow.com for all of the back catalogue. In my company today is
Jill Anderson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Sod Show Garden Podcast.
Jill, what do you do for a living?
Well, I write about gardens, and I was a garden designer for quite a while. I've done two shows here at Hampton Court, and two show gardens, and I co-authored a book on planting design. Been immersed in gardening for many years now. I went and trained at Merestwood College, which is in Surrey, and I did horticulture and garden design. And I don't know why, but gardening has just always been something that I've really, really been interested in. I spent my whole childhood abroad. My dad was in the army and then the civil service. So I was born in Kenya and I lived in places like Pakistan and Germany and sort of travelled around a lot. And after I'd had my children, that was when I went back to college and thought I've got to really do something about this. So I did that training, done some teaching about planting design to garden designers, and also evening classes for people who know nothing about gardening. And actually, that was really, I really loved doing that, because it's people who were kind of almost a bit, you know, people who don't know anything about gardening, and they're almost a bit scared to go into their garden and do anything, you know. And then when they get a little bit confident and they just have a few basic, a bit of basic information about what they can do, it just opens up that whole world of gardening to them, which is fantastic. And, you know, now we hear that gardening is great for people's mental health, for people who actually have mental health issues. It's really, really good for them. And so you can imagine, just for the average person, how good it is, how relaxing it is to be out in your garden. And even if you're not gardening and you're just kind of sitting there, you know, having a cup of tea, it's just nice to be with kind of greenery, you know. It's just essential, I think.
Let's go back then to the two show gardens that you did in, they were both in Hampton. Yeah, I have the nod of approval on that. Do you see that, number one, as a little bit of a like a rite of passage that you have to do that? And number two, you've also done the book thing. Is that like another little bit of a, are there rights of, to be, how would you say, inverted commas, respected? I don't mean that in a disingenuous way in any way.
I don't know. I mean, it was a great thing to do. Being here was a great thing. You know, it was really exciting. And the garden that I did was... the first garden, which I really loved doing, actually was and it was over 10 years ago, so there was quite a lot about sustainability, but really it's about kind of reusing things. So that's what my real kind of passion in gardening is organic gardening, so not using any chemicals, having a garden where you've attracted wildlife, birds, and you've got a nice kind of balance. Where as much as possible you can recycle things. My first garden had a deck made of scaffold boards, which were sanded, and they look fantastic, actually. They look really brilliant, and they were from a wood recycling project in Brighton. So these guys collect a lot of wood which would have otherwise gone to skips and gone to landfill, and then people come and buy it and make stuff, you know.
At the height of the boom, essentially, talking about saving a few bob, were you not a little bit, therefore, how do I call it, ahead of your time? You were very much ahead of your time, if that was the case.
To a certain extent with that garden, because when I did the brief, you know, you have to send in a brief and all the information, and one of the things I wanted to do was use plywood. I mean, I would have liked to have had recycled plywood for the backdrop to the garden. And I couldn't get recycled, so I had to buy new stuff. But the RHS, they were a little bit nervous about it, because they contacted me and said, you know, can you, you know, we've never used this before. I think they're a bit worried that it was going to look really tatty. But one of the things that I'm really, I think is really great is to use stuff which is recycled, but that it looks really smart, you know, so it looks really stylish. So it doesn't look like some kind of, with all due respect, the kind of Tom and Barbara Good Life, you know, kind of cobbled together. I think if it can look really smart and stylish, then that's even better. And that's, you know, that's the kind of designer in me, I suppose, where I want things to look good. Anyway, so the RHS was slightly worried. And did had I used it before? Did I have any pictures? Could I let them know a bit more about it? Anyway, they did. I did use it, and I painted it dark grey. And there are a lot now. That's what people use quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because it is such a fantastic colour. I mean, everything looks quite nice, doesn't it, against a dark grey, really. And lots of other colours go with it, you know. So there were kind of things like that. And I felt really, I was really excited about doing this, because that's, you know, if you go with something that you really want to do and you feel is really right, you kind of just go with it. But I must admit that when my stuff turned up for the build, other people's stuff turned up who were nearby doing these small gardens, and theirs all came kind of shrink wrapped and looking all kind of new and smart. And then mine arrived and was tipped off the back of this lorry and looked like what it was, which was really a heap of old wood, you know. And I at that point, I did kind of have a slight wobble, you know, and thought, yeah. Ooh, but by then, you just have to go with it, don't you? You know, yeah, you just go with it. Okay. And, you know, yes, I did. And it looked fine. And I hope that it did give people ideas, actually, because people came up and asked about it. And also, you know, I gave them quite a lot of information about this wood recycling project, because there are these projects around the country now. The first one was in Brighton, but they're kind of, you know, they're in other places too, and I think that's brilliant, isn't it, to be able to use recycled stuff like that.
It's becoming a little bit, well, I it's a bit like allotmenteering, if you'll allow me contrast or compare, in that in recessionary times, historically, over the centuries, we tend to go back to, you know, growing our own, and if I'm allowed to say it, it's sometimes allowed to be a little bit fashionable to be seen to be frugal with our money, where when the wealth is there, we tend to hire helicopters and drink champagne instead of Pimm's. No disrespect to Pimm's, if you'll allow me to say that as well. From the garden design side of it, are you as heavily involved in that now? Have you delved into other things?
No, I'm not at all. I'm all about writing and my blog and just trying to promote that kind of thing. I think, again, it's kind of just feeling like a change. You know, you just get a gut feeling sometimes of what you want to do. And I think quite often you need to kind of go with that, you know. And I just felt that that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to do any more of that. I'd really like to collaborate with people in some way. And I would really like to carry on with this, promoting this idea of sustainability. I wish I could think of a different word, you know. It sounds a bit serious, doesn't it? And it's not really. It's about, you know, it's about kind of reusing stuff, being a bit canny with things, of how you build things. And you know, if you can have a garden, I think, where you're not using chemicals. I had an allotment actually up until about a year or so ago, and that was really interesting. And that was interesting, taking on part of it that hadn't been cultivated for, well, nobody on the allotment could remember when it was last cultivated. So it was at least 20 years. And so it was dealing with this patch of ground, which was kind of shoulder high with nettles and, you know, bindweed. And with just over a year, being able to grow stuff on it, having kind of cleared it away. I mean, I did have to cover it all with tarpaulin, you know, which it's not a great look, and you wouldn't want it in your garden, but it just goes to show that you can, you know, you don't. I was tempted to get the glyphosate out, you know, and kind of spray it all, but I knew that that wouldn't be the right thing to do.
But you went and studied horticulture, so the basics of that is, if you eliminate one of the factors required for the growth of any plant, in this case, light, you've therefore killed the plant. I gather that was your, if you don't mind me saying, your very simple logic, but logically.
Absolutely, yeah. It is simple, actually, though, isn't it? You know, there's nothing really complex about it. It's time, quite often, that's the thing. Because if you stop using chemicals, you have to wait till a sort of equilibrium is reached and the kind of food chain is set up again, because by spraying things with chemicals you've eliminated a whole section of the food chain, you know, and so it's all a bit out of kilter, So there's a bit of time to wait and patience and just kind of not having a wobble and rushing off to buy chemicals, you know, but just kind of sticking with it as much as you can. So I've got a garden at the moment. We moved almost a year and a half ago, and we're just having it all redone. And I've done a design for it. And so the end of this month, they're going to start building it. And I've tried as much. So I haven't got the allotment anymore, but half the garden is going to be, it's not a huge garden, but we're going to have some raised beds and grow vegetables in half the garden. And, you know, just try with planting and with having water in there to just have reducing the lawn by half and just having it so that, it's the sort of garden I really will feel happy in.
Do you find it hard starting from scratch? I know when I had my first house and I had the garden and things started to mature and the trees got to the height that I wanted, and then logic obviously has to kick in, a house is sold, moved, and all of a sudden you're starting again and you're kind of turning around and going, well, oh God, my daughter is 6, my neighbour is 62, when I first planted those trees, they're not growing as fast as I want them to grow in my head. Have you got that troubled bit with it? I say troubled. It's a love, or to use the Irish word, it's a grow for it.
Well, do you mean that if you kind of, you haven't got the really mature stuff in your garden? Is that what you mean? And you're kind of starting from a kind of, it all looks a bit...
Well, if your last garden was, let's say, built over a 25-year period, and this one is now only going to be a year and a half old, irrespective of whether it was done yesterday or kind of not, it still always needs... It feels new. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's been there for a bit.
I know exactly what you mean, but I think it's also quite exciting, isn't it? Because you're starting with new things. The soil is completely different to the last garden. The kind of aspect is different. So I'm going to be using different plants. And it's that whole thing, isn't it, of getting the right plant for the right place. I know that is a real old cliche, sorry, but it is kind of... if you can get the right plant, and if you can really have good soil, and you can really improve the soil and add loads of muck on the soil, and you've got good soil, and you've got the right plants for that particular location, then they'll take off quite quickly. The difficulty is if you don't have the right plants. You know, if you're kind of, you really, really want to have some lavender, but everything is shady, but nevertheless you buy the lavender because your heart says, I've got to have some lavender, and then you plant it, and then it's shady, and it just looks fine for 6 months, and then it just looks really sad and just dwindles away. That's the, you know, you've got to get the right plants. You've got the right plants for the right garden, and then they grow more quickly. And there are always everybody makes mistakes, you know, no matter how much experience they've got. You just have to kind of accept that, really. But most of the time, if you get the right plant, it'll take off, and it'll grow reasonably quickly. And we're fortunate in that we've got some really nice David Austin roses, and one side of the garden has a really lovely old wall. I think it was part of a kitchen garden at one point, so it's got a really lovely old wall. The other side has the back wall of some garages and is made of breeze blocks, so it's not quite... I'm being really honest here, actually. I don't want to just say it's all marvellous, but you see, that's the challenge then, isn't it? You look at one side of the garden, you think, wow, that looks great. You know, mellow stone, bricks and everything. Little box hedge, David Austin roses. And I do tend on my blog sometimes, well, I haven't been brave enough to take photos, because people like to see nice things. So I'm being really honest here now. But just before it's changed, I will take some photos of the breeze blocks and say, this is what everybody has to deal with, isn't it? You know?
So we're just going to take a little bit of a break here for a second. And I want to bring you back to June 2016 and this conversation with Laura Garnett of Perennial Gardeners Royal Benevolent Society. Take a listen.
Perennial is the trade charity for anyone who works or who has worked in horticulture. And what we do is we offer practical help and support for people when times get tough.
I'm in landscaping 15 years. Why would I pick up the phone to you?
People pick up the phone for a number of reasons. People pick up the phone because usually because they're in trouble or getting to a point in their life when they're getting to be in trouble. They might have hit a problem with... loss of work, they might have lost their job, they might be ill, they might have debt problems, anything that life throws at us today, anything that causes a bump in the road, that's why people pick the phone up to us.
One of the things that struck me recently, and it popped up on my radar a bit, and we have a huge problem with it literally back home and here, is number one, let's be quite frank about this, because statistically it is correct. Grown men who are not able to talk or don't talk, and I guess the adverse side of that is a little bit on the depression side of it and suffering a little bit there. Perennial had put out a note literally saying, if you need to talk. Mm-hmm. I took that on a couple of levels. Mm-hmm. Am I fair to, was that right of me to take it in that sense?
I think so. I think a lot of the, it's quite interesting when our caseworkers, Perennial has a team of caseworkers based all around the country. And I think there's the current count now is 12 or 13 caseworkers and a small team of dedicated debt advice workers as well, because debt is a major issue. Now, what we find, what's reported to me, I work as part of the marketing and development team, what's reported to me is that clients and people that we help, it's a bit like an iceberg. They will come to us and say, I've got this problem and this is our problem. But when we delve in, when we go and we use our professional support to find out what really is the problem isn't what they think it is. The problem is it's like an iceberg under there, and that's because people either aren't, they're not talking, they're not addressing, they're not addressing the problems they have. I think it's fair to say that mental health issues, sometimes they're a symptom and sometimes they're a cause. Isn't that right? Don't you find this is it can be what comes first, I think, is a big question for us all, you know?
Well, I don't want to speak on anybody's behalf, but it is a big problem in the horticultural industry in particular, and I think personally, through friends of mine, I find that they tell me that they get a little bit down because of, number one, seasonal issues, where obviously they're not out working till 9 o'clock at night in the middle of June. They're more home at 4:30 on a December Wednesday afternoon because the weather is bad, and it just changes everything psychologically, maybe. And I'm no expert on it. I can only say what I've felt myself and spoke to friends about it. Is that what you're coming across, I guess, statistically, to back up that?
Absolutely. It's a tough industry. I'm not a horticulturalist. I've spent the last however many years working as in the voluntary sector and charities. This is a really tough industry. And I'm seeing, we're coming to almost the end of a show season now, aren't we? If you take one area of the industry, you take the guys who do the shows and events, we're coming to an end of a season where it's 12-hour days, it's 7-day weeks. There's stress and pressure because there are deadlines and there are people screaming. And still, these people have to put on a show. These people have to, they will have to, nobody cares about their problems because they have to put on a show. Imagine the pressure.
For my own part, I've done the show garden, so I do agree with you on the pressures that are there. But in reality, there are probably more people who are just running a normal, inverted commas, landscaping business. Do you find that because maybe they're very good horticulturists, very good garden designers, very good garden makers and builders and gardeners, etc., etc., but the business side has lapsed, and then equally then on the other side of it, if you have hit a little bit of the mind a hard rock and you're not very good at dealing with your problems, is that kind of the iceberg that maybe you're referring to, that it's, you're almost not talking about it, but it's the cause of all the problems? Is that a better way?
Much easier to, yeah. But this is what's happening. You hit a brick wall because you can't see. And actually, sometimes if you're very close to a problem, you can't see the solution. And sometimes it can be very easy for somebody, one of our caseworkers, to say, actually, you know what, this is the change you have to make. This is what you have to do to clear everything away. And Perennial doesn't just, we're not a sticking plaster. Perennial can give grants, and we do give grants. We can make a financial problem go away, but we're also making, it's very important to make sure that problem won't come back again. So that might be some changes to business plans. That might be, some suggestions to how to make your business run better. You're completely right in what you say. Best horticulturist, you might be a brilliant horticulturist. You might be a complete and utter, scientist, but running a business, it's another set of skills, isn't it? And do you come out, how do you learn those skills?
You learn by, I guess, being stung and riding the wave financially. You learn by literally either A, sinking or swimming, and sometimes it's the sinking bit where you just cannot see the wood from the trees. Mm-hmm. And make no bones about it, whether you've got a penny sweet shop or the biggest businesses in the world, sometimes you just need somebody to come in, put their arm around you and say, come on, I'll show you how it looks over from this side.
Absolutely.
To the burning issue, and came up in the interview with Chris, but Peter's badly tanned Irish arse and the perennial calendar, which is obviously going to be a hot seller. What are the updates on that as per what is written down in front of me?
Are you going in the calendar?
Well, apparently I have a verbal contract with Chris Crooker that my arse is going in. But on a serious note, Chris, we need to solve this and we need to sort it out. There has not been an Irishman's bottom in any grubby gardener's calendar, and I'll bite, I might have a bad tan, and not an all over onesie kind of a tan,
right,
Chris? But we need to talk about this. How are we going to fix it?
Well, I think we probably should.
I think we should too. I've never really paid my own bottom a compliment, Chris. If people on a serious note want to get in touch, how do they do that?
Can I firstly say, now that you've actually said that and that's out in the public domain, that's almost like signing a contract, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently. Well, hold on a second. I didn't know it was going to work out like that. Yeah, no.
Well, you know.
Listen, if it's good enough for Michael Perry and Darren Jacques, it's good enough for me,
exactly,
my man.
Exactly.
Yeah, but
if people do want to get in touch with us, it might be that they want our help. It might be that they want to fundraise or volunteer or look at the corporate partnership scheme. So I would advise the first thing to do is go to our website, which is www.perennial.org.uk. But you can get in touch with us on 0800 093 8510 as well. And we'd love to hear from people.
And so I can confirm that the 2018 perennial calendar does feature this Irishman's bottom, and it is on sale now as we speak. If you need any contact details for that, just send us a note at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com. I should also add that the party for perennial has been given a date. It is Thursday the 18th of January 2018, and my bottom will both be there on that day. I look forward to seeing you. If you need any details for that, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/Sideshow and Sideshow.com. Let's get back to Jill.
Well, now we're dancing through the garden, and what a garden I have made. And now the death will grow my jasmine. I find it soothing, I'm afraid.
So let's go all the way back. Were you, as a kid, were you out the back garden when everybody else was playing with dolls and dolls' houses, making muck balls and growing seeds? Did you do that? Did you get the white dress very, 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 very dirty? And oh my God, she's at it again. She's still. Were you one of those kids?
That would be nice to say that, wouldn't it? But it's not actually. That isn't the case, because, and I think I haven't been one of these kind of, when I was three, I was out there with my granddad in the garden. And I think that was because I lived abroad all the time, you know. So, you know, and we lived in places for 3 years and then we moved, and it was army accommodation, you know, and you just kept moving. So there was never that kind of thing. But my parents, particularly my dad, he was a really keen gardener. And so when we settled back here, you know, he was quite a keen gardener. And I don't quite know, you know, I think it's just one of those things when you get your first house and you get your first garden, and that's when you really know. If you haven't had that kind of childhood where you've been, you know.
What do you remember your dad growing? What was his, everybody has a thing that they're great at, you know, whether it's football or rugby, there's always one trick that they're able to do.
Gosh, well, in terms of, what do you mean, what did he like growing, that kind of thing? He was quite practical, you know. He was that kind of generation which is quite practical about gardens. There was no kind of element of design. I, I don't think there was even an element of let's just relax in the garden. It was kind of a thing that you did the garden and you kept it looking really nice and you grew vegetables, but you spent your time gardening. You didn't spend your time relaxing. I don't know if everybody's dad was like that. But
there's that famous quote, what man needs in gardening is a cast iron back with a hinge in it. I know there's a list of them on Google somewhere. And then the one that I remember, I think I gave a garden talk some time ago, and I think the opening quote that I used was from a book, can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, it'll come to me again, but I think that one said that there was something that suited the British character about essentially hearing the sound of, you know, the fork, which is it's that hard work. But our garden was exactly the same. Yours was kind of none really different. Was he a strict man? Did you take things from him that you brought into what you do or what you use now in your...
I don't know, really. He was also of that generation where he used a lot of chemicals, you know? So obviously I haven't. And maybe there's that kind of... And maybe there's that kind of... you know, it's all gone kind of full circle now, isn't it? That was the kind of gardener of the kind of 50s and 60s was... You know, because chemicals, they were the thing. People didn't worry about them then, you know. He had this regime of every week he sprayed the roses, irrespective of whether they really needed it. You know, there's a kind of regime to gardening. And yeah. I guess the thing is, once you start that, you have to keep up, because actually you've then obliterated all the insects that are going to help you, that are going to eat all the aphids, haven't you? So you have to carry on.
Well, you know that now, but at the time, you would have known no difference.
No, that was just what people did, wasn't it? It was cheap, it was quick, so that's what you did. So he had a fairly kind of regimented regime of the garden. Did people relax in gardens then? Did they kind of say, let's have a beer and a barbecue? Well, people didn't, did they? Did they?
I don't know. I'm struck by two things. I remember a mate of mine saying to me that the best husbands are always those from, and I've never been in the army, but the best husbands are those from the army because they're used to doing what they're told rather than... So there's one element to that which gives me the regimented bit, but also...
Yes, you know, I've never thought of that. That's true. You know, that's where that comes from, isn't it? I'm sure it does. I never realised that. That's very insightful.
I'm a very... I don't know. Listen, I can't... I'll take that as some form of an oddball compliment. Was Mam a good gardener, or was she a bad gardener, or did she just
I
not like it?
I think she was... I don't really remember her gardening very much, actually. I seem to remember as well he had two greenhouses at one point. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. I don't know how many sheds there were. I can't remember how many sheds there were. But, yeah, so that was all, you know, people did that more perhaps then than going to the garden centre maybe.
I only ever remember Dad going to the garden centre to buy lettuce sets and the polystyrene trays way back when. That's all I really remember. But apart from that, you kind of grew everything yourself. It was a little bit, how would you say it, on the basic level.
I think so, yeah. There was no kind of ordering little plants on the internet and having them sent to you, was there?
No, none of that.
Definitely not.
Brothers, sisters?
Yeah, I've got a sister. No, not really, no. So it's me, really. I don't think it's really come from my childhood, as you probably gathered. I don't think it has. And I'm not quite sure where it's come from. And I think there is a big element of design in all of this, you know, for me. I do like it all to look nice. I like eating. I like food. So I think that's why I like growing stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, quick one. On the book part of it, what's the story with the book? Is that still available to buy? Can we still get that?
I think it is. It's called Planting Design Essentials. And that was about 5 years ago.
It done good? It got received well, I gather?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it was good. It's quite hard work. No, it's quite hard work writing a book, but quite interesting. It was based on some... you know, if you've done some teaching, you've kind of got a... And so it was that was kind of all of... You've got your kind of, you know, your lessons and your strategy and what you're going to teach. And so you've got... And you've done your kind of research and you've got it. So it's kind of based on that to a certain extent. So that gives you a head start, actually, if you've done something like that, you know, because you've got the information there. Yeah.
If people want to get in touch, you I know you're on the Twitter.
I am Growing Nicely. So that's my website, growingnicely.co.uk. I'm on Instagram, it's Growing Nicely. And actually, I'm on Twitter, completely different name on there, which I know is not what you're not supposed to do that, but it's Jill A. Gardens.
If you're driving and you're on the M50 or the M7 or the M9, just send us a note at Sideshow on Twitter and we'll put you directly in touch with Jill. And Jill, thank you so much for your time. Real genuine pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. It's been great.